And now we, our next guest is Antonia Juhas, who is a author of the book, The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. It just focused a lot on what's going on in Iraq. Antonia, are you there?
I am. I'm having a hard time hearing you, though.
You are? Are you there now?
Yeah.
Okay. I heard a little beep going. The whole Iraq operation seems to, the wheels seem to be falling off that little wagon, but the U.S. still at the same time seems to be trying to grab what it can. Now, how do we explain all this?
Well, first of all, I make a big distinction between the U.S. and the Bush administration. So mm-hmm. I think the Bush administration is definitely still trying to hang on to what it can in Iraq, while the American public is very, very, very much turned against the war. So there's a pretty big difference there. But I think that there's at least two very important things going on in Iraq right now. One is something, unexpected or not really anticipated by the Bush administration, which is the level of sectarian strife which has emerged, and also the organization and the intensity of the opposition to the occupation. But also unanticipated, I believe, by the Bush administration, is the level of opposition to the war by the American public and certainly the global public. And all of those things are working to, really make it quite likely that hopefully the occupation will end, and that the Bush administration's goals in Iraq might not be met. At the same time, there is a political and legal restructuring of Iraq, which is actually going very well to plan. And the culmination of that restructuring, and in my book, The Bush Agenda, I go into detail about the plans for the restructuring, how the restructuring happened, the impacts of it, and we can talk more about it here, but probably most pressing for the discussion right now is that what is happening successfully is the remaking of Iraq's legal infrastructure, and in particular the oil laws, that will make it, that if all comes to plan, and it appears very likely that it is about to come to plan, there will be a new national oil law in place in Iraq, which will open up Iraq's oil to private foreign corporate investment on terms that are literally unprecedented in any oil-rich nation, but particularly in the Middle East, essentially granting significantly more control and profit control to the private foreign companies rather than to the government. And that law is about to take place, and the companies that are ready to sign the contracts are Exxon, Chevron, Conoco, Shell, and BP. Now, once they sign the contracts, the companies need to get to work, and I argue that the 130,000 American soldiers on the ground in Iraq are ultimately there to provide a security force for the oil companies, and that unless we have quite a bit to say about it, they will stay until that happens. And at least from a legal standpoint, the Bush administration is right on schedule in seeing essentially oil that was closed to U.S. oil companies and U.S. control will now be open to U.S. oil companies and under U.S. control, thanks to an invasion and an occupation.
How much opposition is there in Iraq to this?
There is a great deal of opposition. However, there's two parts. First of all, your listeners hopefully have maybe even heard from the Iraqi oil workers themselves, who have been very well organized and working in particular in the United States with U.S. labor against the war, teaming up efforts to bring the voice of Iraqi oil workers to the United States to let us hear their opposition, intense opposition, to the selling off of their oil to U.S. companies. However, what has happened in Iraq is that because daily life is so out of control, not only from a security perspective, also, the economic restructuring of Iraq opened up Iraq to 150 U.S. corporations that have utterly, utterly failed in the reconstruction, and we can't underestimate the impact of that on Iraqis and their daily life. They're 3.5 years after the invasion, 3.5 years, water, electricity, basic sewage, health care, only in very limited places are these services even up to pre-war levels, and in most cases even below, and pre-war, you know, wasn't particularly good. And so while Iraqis are struggling with, you know, are they safe to walk out on the street today? Will there be a puddle of sewage when they do? Will they have electricity today? It's very hard to keep tabs on every legal discussion that's taking place between the Bush administration and the Iraqi oil minister and, you know, maybe the prime minister of Iraq. So unfortunately, a lot of these legal transformations are taking place way under the radar screen. The other important point is to make is that while there were certainly people within the Bush administration who wanted to come into Iraq and privatize the oil industry, the oil companies are really the ones that said, you know, that's going to lead to way too much unrest. We want to do a slow process, a legal process. We want to get a new Iraqi government in place. We want an Iraqi law to change the oil infrastructure, not a Bremer order like the other changes. We want to sign contracts with an elected government, and we want it to be all kosher and not be full privatization, because that would create too much anger. What might happen is that Iraqis, you know, a lot of it might happen before they are aware of what's going on. However, as I said, there's a tremendous amount of resistance to the presence of U.S. oil companies, to the privatization of the oil infrastructure at any level. And I think, you know, the more information that Iraqis have, the more likely they'll be able to stop this successful Bush agenda from taking hold.
Well, where does the oil go now? Does it go out by tanker? I've heard that there is an existing pipeline from northern Iraq that runs through Syria to Israel, and people think that this is one of the grand schemes of, you know, all this turmoil going on of Israel getting its oil in the future from Iraq. Is that happening, or are they going through a pipeline to Turkey? Where is the oil going?
There's several pipelines and there's tankers. I think one of the most important things that just isn't being emphasized enough is that, you know, while production of Iraq's oil is not up to what the Bush administration had hoped or anticipated it would be before the war, it's ever since the invasion, it's only ever been just slightly below pre-war level, slightly below pre-war levels, and several times has reached pre-war levels. That's 2.5 million barrels of oil a day. And exports have also remained incredibly consistent, now just below pre-war exports or even at pre-war exports. What that means is that the companies that are marketing that oil, which are Exxon, Chevron, Conoco, Marathon, BP, Shell, these companies are already making a tremendous amount of money off of Iraqi oil, and have been since the war. They've been doing quite well. They've gotten their hands on quite a bit of that oil, and more, certainly way more than they had prior to the invasion, when the only oil that was coming out of Iraq was managed through the Oil for Food program. And was a much more diverse network of companies. One of the problems for those who are interested in getting oil out of Iraq is that the pipelines have to run through Iran or Syria, or the oil has to come out through the Gulf. And there's certainly an interest in among the members of the Bush administration to having regimes in place in Iran and Syria that would be more predictable in securing those oil pipelines. Now, I certainly wouldn't, I'm not in the camp that thinks the whole war that just took place between Israel and Hezbollah, Israel and Lebanon, is about oil pipelines. But I think that they certainly play a role, and certainly play a role in the entire calculus of the Bush administration's decisions to allow Israel to respond with the brutality that it did.
Well, but that response has largely failed. And it's interesting that so far the U.S. has been able to get this oil out of Iraq, even though the whole nation is descending into chaos. But it's hard for me to see that can continue. But I don't know. Do they think it can?
No, I mean, here's the thing. You know, they can plan and plan and plan. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what we have to be aware of is, you know, we can't allow them to sneak through the legal infrastructure, because we don't know what's going to happen with Iraq. We don't know. I mean, I am certainly one who thought, for example, that the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah would not have ended so quickly. And people can, you know, thank God, fighting can end. and that's a very good thing. We certainly obviously want all of the fighting to end in Iraq. And that will, if that does, it will create security. There's no knowing on the. It's very unpredictable what's going to happen on the ground in Iraq. What we can know and can follow is what they're trying to do from the legal side, and in my mind, stop them from doing that, so that Iraqis are the ones that ultimately get to make the decision about how their oil is used, not American companies and a Bush administration that gained that position through invasion. So, you know, anything could happen. And you know, we should play our part in making sure that it's a peaceful end, and that also when peace comes, there isn't a legal infrastructure that's locked in whatever peaceful system emerges in Iraq to a corporate agenda that they had nothing to do with.
Antonia, this is Will Seaman. In your recent articles on the shifting situation in Iraq, you've described how there have been investigations into these American contracts, and several of them canceled, and as you described it, turned over to Iraqi contractors. And the other comment that was interesting in this recent article was that you suggested that there was less of a security concern when these contracts did go to local Iraqi companies as opposed to foreign companies. Can you describe maybe a little bit more detail about that process that's going on right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And just so your listeners know, that article, which appeared on the Huffington Post, and many other articles I've written on these topics are on my website, which is thebushagenda.net. Because of intense public pressure focused on the corporations that have profited in Iraq, which has led to congressional pressure, the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction finally has begun looking into the individual projects in Iraq that have been contracted to U.S. companies. So there are around 1,800 projects underway that U.S. companies have received contracts for in Iraq. The Special Inspector General has actually only investigated about 50 of those, so very few. Once the Inspector General starts looking at the individual projects, however, they find incredible waste, mismanagement. In the case of the Parsons Corporation, which is based in Los Angeles, Parsons was contracted, and I'm going to get these numbers wrong because they're not right in front of me, but to build about 150 healthcare centers in Iraq. 2.5 years later, they had only built 6, and only 2 of them are functioning. Yet they've been paid for the rest of the facilities. So that contract has now been canceled. And again, under pressure both from the public, but also from, in particular, U.S. soldiers on the ground, there has now been a shift in the Bush administration, really being led by the Army Corps of Engineers, to when a contract is canceled for a U.S. company, giving it to an Iraqi company. And their findings have shown a remarkable reduction in the need to spend money on security or to have attacks happen when Iraqis aren't just working on the project, but when it's clearly their project, that they're not being subcontracted by an American company, but rather they are in control, then these projects move along more cheaply, more efficiently, and without the security risk, which is security risks are obviously aren't just expensive, they are deadly. And, you know, it completely changes the tenor of the operations. And what you see are, you know, water facilities, electrical facilities, healthcare facilities finally getting built. And I think that, you know, it's certainly something very key for the anti-war movement to focus on right now is getting the U.S. contracts canceled and getting the money turned over immediately to Iraqi companies.
Antonia, this is Hala Goris. I have a question for you about from the perspective of the Arab Street, starting with how this invasion occurred in terms of what the Arab Street was watching the Bush administration immediately moving in and protecting the oil fields instead of the museums, and all the way to the information the Arab Street gets about how Bechtel has profited. And one thing in particular is talking about the Basra Children's Hospital, if you can do that.
Absolutely. You know, the world watched American soldiers go into Iraq and immediately protect the oil infrastructure, protect the oil ministry, and allow every other ministry to be looted. I have spoken to U.S. soldiers who were on those commands who said themselves that was the first moment for a lot of them when they realized this war is just not what we were sold. You know, this is not what we were told. This isn't about freedom. This is about protecting oil. And for many of the soldiers, that was a turning point for them as well. Many of those soldiers who I've talked to, spoken to have now returned to become significantly important and crucial anti-war activists as well. And many of them, time and time again, their story starts with, yeah, there I was in Iraq protecting an oil facility while I saw someone, you know, running away with a hospital bed. And of course, the museums, as you mentioned. I think those images definitely led the way towards, you know, there was obvious opposition the world over, particularly in Arab and Muslim countries, to the invasion in the first place. But once it happened, there was definitely a willingness to say, okay, the Americans are there, let's let them oust Saddam. That's what, we'd like to see Saddam Hussein gone. The Americans have spent, you know, decades propping him up. Now they're willing to take him out. Great, let's get rid of Saddam Hussein. But once that was done, everybody wanted the Americans to leave. And when they didn't, and when the continued focus remained on oil, and corporate profit, it has continued to turn more and more and more and more the ideas of people all across the Arab and Muslim world, obviously, against the United States, not just the Bush administration. There have been polls that have been taken of people in Iraq where they have said that they believe that insurgents attack U.S. soldiers because they believe that the U.S. soldiers are there to steal their resources. The Iraqis don't think the insurgents attack because the Americans are there to attack their freedom or because the insurgents want Saddam Hussein to be back in power. At least in the opinion of Iraqis, that's why the insurgents attack. And, you know, whatever we can do to end that, the better. Bechtel is a San Francisco-based corporation that received $2.8 billion for reconstruction. And while $2.8 billion sounds huge, it's actually quite minuscule compared to the dozen or so other U.S. companies that have received significantly more than that, topping it off with Halliburton at now nearly $20 billion. Bechtel has had very little focus, however, put on its reconstruction and its task. Were and are water, electricity, sewage, roads, all the most important areas. Finally, the Iraq Inspector General focused on an individual Bechtel project, the building of a critical hospital for women and children in Basra that Bechtel had received a $50 million contract to build. And it was the same story with Parsons. 2.5 years later, when the investigation started, they found essentially nothing had been done, that Bechtel had subcontracted to a Jordanian company that had subcontracted to several Iraqis. There was no management. There was no work being done. And, you know, we're still, Bechtel, for at least a period of time, was misrepresenting its work and its reports to the U.S. Agency for International Development that oversaw the contract. And then the U.S. Agency for International Development was outright lying in its reports to Congress about how the hospital was proceeding. So clearly there are tremendous problems in just our understanding of what's going on the ground if the agencies responsible are lying to Congress about their progress. That contract was canceled and was turned over to Iraqi companies, and now, you know, hopefully there will be a chance for it to be done. But the issue that you raise, which I think is critical, is Iraqis see this failure. You know, they know that Bechtel has $2.8 billion. They know that their companies aren't getting the money. They know that the hospitals aren't getting built. And obviously all that is doing is creating significantly more opposition. And I don't know if you all have mentioned this already, but just yesterday it was reported that attacks against U.S. soldiers are also increasing dramatically in Iraq. We're mostly just seeing the civilian violence, which of course is critically important for us to see, the attacks on civilians and the sectarian violence. What we're hearing about less and less is that the opposition to the U.S. presence is still as strong and as determined as it ever has been. And of course, the bottom line to that is that the U.S. troops and the U.S. corporations need to go, but the U.S. money needs to stay and go towards reconstruction.
And we need to remind our listeners that you're tuned to KBOO Community Radio, grassroots listener-sponsored radio in Portland, 90.7 FM in Portland. 90.7, yes, in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, and in the Columbia Gorge at 91.1 FM. You're listening to a special public affairs program focused on the Middle East. Our guest right now is Antonia Rujas. Rujas of recently authored the book, The Bush Agenda. And coming up at 10 a.m., we're going to be speaking with Noam Chomsky. So we have just about 4 minutes more in this segment. Antonia, I wonder if you could speak to, maybe remind our listeners of the massive loss of monies, somewhere on the order of $11 billion that went missing early on in this under the Bremer occupation. The scale of the corruption really was historic, and I wonder if you could sort of talk a little bit about that element of this occupation.
Sure. The corruption and the misuse of money has been absolutely obscene, particularly because of the desperate need for this money in Iraq. And I'll just say really quickly, on September 30th, all money that hasn't been directly committed to a project out of the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund, there's two large pots of congressional money that have gone to Iraq reconstruction. They total about $20 billion. Whatever money of that hasn't been committed to a project reverts back to the U.S. Treasury and is not necessarily then committed to Iraq reconstruction. And a message that you know, I think is critically important is that that money is vital. The Iraqis need that money, and that money is something that obviously we owe from a moral perspective to Iraq and also a legal perspective, and it needs to be spent on Iraq reconstruction. There is between $8 and $11 billion that is Iraqi money from a fund of Iraq's money that the U.S. occupation government of Iraq, led by Paul Bremer, misplaced, was unaccounted for. That was Iraqi money. That is yet to be accounted for. It's just gone. There are stories of literally millions of dollars in cash being passed around in duffel bags in Iraq. These are reports by members of the Coalition Provisional Authority. The best source of information actually right now on how much money is, even today, right now, there's about $3 billion of the Fund for Reconstruction that just no one knows where it's being spent. No one knows what's happening to it. And that's even with the Iraq Special Inspector General, which is a U.S. office, trying to keep track. This is work for our members of Congress to do. They have to keep tabs on this money, and they have to keep this money focused on Iraq. And that's definitely something that we can work for and advocate for. Also, essentially, if the money is that we know about is removed from all of the failed projects, essentially forcing the U.S. companies to return all of the money that has been misspent, and it goes to Iraqi companies, at least we have that sense of security that it won't be abused by the Bush administration, which is what has happened so far, and that there would be an international oversight over the money that went to reconstruction is what I propose. In my book, I know we have to wrap up, I have the last chapter of the Bush agenda is alternatives, and in that chapter I propose a new reconstruction fund which I would encourage your listeners to look at, and then also more information on my website, which is thebushagenda.net.
Okay, we've been talking to Antonia Juhas, author of The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time, and who has a website at thebushagenda.net. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
I think we're trying to get our next guest. I don't know if he's on the line yet.
we can keep talking.
I guess so. Hey, could I? A big question for a few remaining seconds. You know, some people think that the U.S. instigated the civil war in Iraq. Now, I don't know. The purpose would be to divide and conquer, but it seems to me if that is true, it's certainly blown up. Is that your... What do you think about that?
I think the United States instigated the civil war in Iraq by invading and occupying Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
That action led to the extremists on each side taking hold of their respective positions and demanding that their positions be heard. The United States then was so eager to ensure that it got a government up and going right away that would represent its interests, that it allowed, you know, sectarian divisions to increase and expand, and it pushed it. Basically, the presence of the occupation pushed the extremists to the fore, if that makes sense. The people who were willing to jump out and say loudly and say aggressively, "We want the end to this occupation," or "We think this occupation is the best," and those are the people whose voices were heard. And the continued presence of the occupation is the thing that's going to make the sectarian violence only worse. I personally don't think it serves the interests of the administration, but I'm willing to hear somebody argue that it does. I think that what the administration wants more than anything else is a pliable leadership in Iraq that will service Bush administration interests. It doesn't need to be, you know, the administration that Bush would have carved out of clay in Iraq. It just needs to be an administration that is more amenable to Bush interests than the last 10 years of Saddam Hussein. I mean, of course, mm-hmm. remember, George Bush's father, George Bush, and Reagan in particular, worked very, very, very closely with Saddam Hussein. Bechtel, KBR, Lockheed Martin, Chevron, all of these companies worked very closely with Saddam Hussein. They have no problem in working with governments that don't exactly align with their interests, all of their stated interests.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being with Antonia Juhas, author of The Bush Agenda.
Thank you for having me.